I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to Minute 22 of Season 6 of Movie Rap Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Tierney Steele of the Apocalypse Now Minute. Welcome back, Tierney.
Hello, hello! Well, hello! To quote this film.
Yes. So, welcome back. I'm glad that you were able to come back. Even though yesterday started becoming a little bit more of a an old timers club, or old home week, as they refer
old
to it.
Old home week.
Old home week. Yeah.
I would not miss the big Charleston contest.
There you go. So minute 22 begins with George starting to dance around with his new dance partner. And ends with Mary and George deciding that they're going to continue to dance.
It's so sweet. I'm going to keep saying that this week. I'm sorry.
That's fine. You are more than welcome to do so. That's okay.
I actually started thinking because they do the well, hello, and then hello. And all I could think of was in Sleepless in Seattle. And all I could say was hello, which I know is a different classic movie, but... I'm getting my rom-coms crossed a little bit.
That's okay. Rom-com crossing is fine. Actually, would you call this a rom-com?
That's an excellent question. I don't think it is a rom-com.
I don't think so either.
No. If it was from Mary's point of view.
At this point, maybe. But... I would say at this point, I think later on, things get a little bit more... dramatic, even for Mary, as she's going through her life with George. I mean, it's a love story, but would I necessarily call it a rom-com? I don't know. I'm pretty sure that when I did When Harry Met Sally, there was at least one person who put this on their list as like one of their favorite rom-coms. I think so. I'd have to go back and check that list, but I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily call this a rom-com. It doesn't seem like there's enough comedy in this. There are comic moments, but I wouldn't necessarily call this. Would you call it?
Yeah,
that?
the drama's stronger on it.
Here you see. I looked it up. There is one person who put it on their list, and it was their number 4 rom-com. Oh, that was actually Jim O'Kane.
Hey, nice. Well, sorry, Jim O'Kane. Yeah. I think this probably falls not under rom-com, but it is definitely a love story. So it is adjacent. But yeah, I think the drama's a little bit more. It has the rom-com element of the obnoxious guy with someone take this man's whistle. I cannot stand this.
Right. Makes sense. So, George and Mary are both transfixed with one another as they start to dance. And they have a very interesting conversation here. Well, hello. Hello. You look at me as if you didn't know me. Well, I don't. You pass me on the street almost every day. Me? Mm-hmm. No, that was a little girl named Mary Hatch. That wasn't you. So...
Smith Talker George.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were saying yesterday, that George was just completely oblivious about who Mary Hatch is.
This is a good way of getting around the baked-in awkwardness of, this is a small town, they all know each other, he's friends with her brother, he's known her since they were kids, but we want this to be a moment. And so this kind of lets you right in the, yeah, I saw you, but I didn't see you
right. element. What do you think the definition of the name etch means?
It's an art technique.
Okay, so the name Hatch is an English surname that was taken by people who were living near an important gate or entrance.
Okay.
It comes from the Old English term for gate.
And listeners of the Indiana Jones Minute are giggling away like crazy right now. Indiana Jones Minute has a thriving listener community, in that we have a lot of jokes that probably aren't that funny unless you were there for the great Hatch debate of the pandemic.
So do you want to let us in, those of us who were not part of that debate?
So in the underwear of men, there is a hatch. Do you go over the hatch or through the hatch? This occupied us for months during the pandemic.
And where in Indiana Jones did that come up? Because I don't recall anyone ever going to the bathroom in Indiana Jones. Actually, that's not true.
But
Short Round does.
Shouldn't they have?
Short Round does.
Yes. Yes. So I don't know. I don't remember the context and how this came up. But it's the Indiana Jones Minute is hosted by three guys who have been friends most of their lives. And so somehow discussions end up kind of derailing into places you never imagined.
No, that is definitely one of them.
We also talk a lot about Mountain Dew for a group that's about Indiana Jones. So, but yes, the great hatchet, and to the point where, like, I now, like, when I'm full, my son is a kid, all right? Like, I fold my son's underwear and I'm like, oh, where's the hatch? And then I'm like, that's not the normal thing. Stop it. You've been corrupted by years of silly listeners crusading. But there's no impropriety here. There's just a good old fashioned falling in love and entering a dance contest.
That's right.
As wholesome as can be.
That's right. And then we see Harry standing on the stage. Now, I was actually shocked at this point because I've seen this movie so many times and I never noticed that it was Harry who's standing up there, doing this annoying thing for the. You know, to talk about this context. You know, I always just thought it was okay. It's one of the other people around or whatever it is. And, you know, yeah. Harry said
the
a few weeks ago. That's right. And Harry says a few weeks ago that he's on the EATS committee. Okay. We couldn't figure out what exactly an EATS committee is officially. It must mean the person who's in charge of bringing all the plates and bringing the food.
Yeah.
You know,
coordinating the food. Yeah,
that's right. But beyond that, I couldn't think of, but it seems that Harry is more involved than just that. He's not only on the EATS committee. Maybe he's in charge of everything, basically.
Is Harry class president?
It's possible. It is definitely possible.
I don't know
possible.
Why that's striking me as so cute, but just knowing, like, that he's going to go on to be Harry Bailey, it's like, oh.
I think that's a good observation.
Is this the rare case of someone who peaks in high school but actually doesn't peak in high school?
That's right. I would actually think that you were right about that. It makes sense that he is like class president or something like that, and therefore he's the one who's running things. He's the one in charge. You know, and I always thought that he screams out he, but he actually says oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. But he says it in a way that it sounds like he's, you know, hear ye, type of thing. And then he goes, the big Charleston contest, the prize, a genuine loving cup. And he holds up, a little trophy. And he goes, those not tapped by the judges will remain on the floor. Let's go. So
it's a weird prize for a high school dance contest.
Yes, it really is. Now, what do you know about the Charleston? Are you a dancer, Tierney?
So I know about the Charleston, but it's my uplifting experience. So I don't know if you want me to tell it here.
Okay, so we will hold off and hear that at the end of today's episode.
Okay. No, I was just more like, what happens? I mean, like, sure, it's high school in the 20s. I'm sure there are a bunch of couples here dancing that are going to end up married or are already married. It doesn't say it's restricted to the students, but like a loving cup is a weird thing to get. Like, what if they're not a couple? You know, then who gets it? You know, if they're not a couple going home to the same place, do you share? Does she get it? Does he get it? Like, what's
I
the.
think you need to have
I don't
like a
know.
you need to go to a lawyer and get a and drop an agreement as who gets custody,
Yeah.
visiting
I
rights
don't
and things
know.
like that.
It's also like, I mean, obviously, this is a planned competition that they had in mind, but like, I don't know. That cup just seems like a lot for them. You know, like if they said it's time for the big Charleston contest, the winner gets, you know, this bouquet of flowers, you know, or something like that, I wouldn't have questioned it at all. But he holds up this giant like trophy cup, and I'm like, wait a minute. Did they just want to say loving cup because we know that George and Mary are falling in love?
It's very possible.
Is that like not subliminal messaging, but almost, you know, let's just say the words loving and then cut to them.
Now, is a loving cup something? I mean, is that the idea behind it?
It's the two-handled cup. And so each person in a couple holds one side and you drink together. You're tipping it together. You're drinking together.
Oh, okay.
So
See, I
it's
didn't.
loving.
That just like went right over my head. I didn't even think about that. I was just thinking, okay, here's a
I
trophy, and that
really
was it.
hope I am describing that correctly. Let me Google and make sure that I have understood what a loving cup is
A
better.
loving cup
A
in air.
shared drink. Yes. A shared drinking container and banquet and usually made of silver, which like makes it like it looks like a trophy cup. And it's just like this is a big thing for like a day. What if you enter this with a friend?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Anyway,
Well, then
that
maybe you
spoiler
wouldn't maybe.
alert for the movie, it doesn't matter. Like Marty, we never see this cup again.
That's right. Well, no, that's not true. We will see it. We will see it all later this week and the end of and throughout next week. They're carrying it on their way home.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. All
Because
right.
they have to, spoiler alert, they
The
actually
cup
have
has a
to
longer
show us that they won.
the cup has a longer tenure in this movie than her brother.
That's right. Who isn't even at the wedding,
There's
Actually,
so
they
many
mentioned
movies where
Marty.
I'm like,
Marty is mentioned during World War II.
okay, oh, that's right. That's right. Cause like you could come up with an excuse for why he's not there at things, but like he's not, you know, it's not like, oh, and Marty couldn't be here because he has the LSATs tomorrow. I don't know.
Right.
Like there's just nothing. Anyway, and by the time they show Marty again, I had forgotten that it was her brother, honestly. I was just like, oh yeah, one of the gang. That's fine. I didn't even remember it was her brother. Okay, anyway, back to this wonderful moment in time. We're
Well,
out in the
I mean,
dance.
we do get to see him also, in the opening scenes of the movie. He is one of the ones that's mentioned there. So, we are aware of the fact that
But
he's
yeah,
around.
he's like one of the gang, and then he's not at the wedding. He's not there at the end. I mean, like, what are we doing here, guys? Anyway,
That's right.
justice for Marty.
You never know. You never know. Right. So they just talk about later on during World War II, they mentioned the fact that Marty helped capture the Remagen Bridge. That's it. But that sounds to me like a reference to Saving Private Ryan or something like that. Marty was one of the guys who survived in Saving Private Ryan. Who knows? So the Charleston is a dance that was named after the city, Charleston, South Carolina. It became popular in 1923, and it was composed by James P. Johnson, and it was part of a Broadway show called Running Wild. And then it ended up becoming one of the most popular hits of the entire decade, and the peak year for the Charleston as a dance. When do you think that was?
Was it 1928?
It was 1927. So therefore, okay, it makes sense, okay, that, you know, these teenagers would still be doing, because, yeah, think about it. If it was 1927, the school year was, you know, from, let's say, September 1927 to, you know, June 1928. So this is still part of, yeah, their senior year. So it from that perspective, it shows that, you know, Capra knew what he was talking about by putting that, mm-hmm, here. You know, for
and
him
I love
to just look back and say, you know, just for while he's creating this movie, you know, because I'm assuming you have you read the short story that this is based on by any chance?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so it has almost nothing to do with the movie. the only thing is, it's about a guy who wants to commit suicide and decide, and an angel comes and turns him into a quote unquote brush salesman in order to show him what life in his little town would be like if he wasn't there. There's no potter. He just sees that his wife ends up marrying his rival and, you know, wants to go back with her. And that's it. I mean, it keeps the basic idea of someone wanting to commit suicide because they feel that their life has no meaning. You know, that's the connection here. So basically, Capra and four other writers sat down and, you know, created this whole story out of basically nothing, because this whole backstory, mm-hmm, is something that they just had to create on their own. So the fact that one of them remembered that, hey, 1928 was the year that the Charleston was popular, that's pretty impressive.
I just love that this is what passes for bad dance. Like, Donna Reed and Jimmy Stewart are like, oh, we suck at this. It's like, it was a different time.
Yes. So the dancing, the dance itself is a fast kicking step, kicking the feet both forward and backwards, and later done with a tap. That's more or less what the dance is. Maybe your story later will tell us a little more about that. I'm not a dancer, so I don't know anything beyond that. But I think it's the idea of kicking out your heels as you're dancing. I think that's the idea behind the whole thing. I like the way that in a very succinct way, they tell us the rules of this dance competition. You know, they just say, if the judges tap you, then you got to go. That's it. You know, we don't know who the judges are. We don't know what their qualifications are. You know, later on, we'll see that the principal is one of the judges. So I don't know where he is connected to the whole thing, but you know, it's an interesting way to do it, right? So at this point, George then says to Mary, "I'm not very good at this," and she says, "Neither am I." And he goes, "Okay, what can we lose?" And they just start, you know, dancing, and most of the rest of this minute, we get about 20 seconds of the two of them just doing these very crazy moves, which I guess you know, are considered the Charleston. And I love the way that the two of them are just looking at this other couple who are next to them, and they're basically trying to copy them the whole time.
Yes. It's very sweet. And I mean, they're right in that, what do they have to lose? They get tapped. They go sit down. That's fine.
Like, that's right. We
no
try.
No harm done.
We try.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why not try?
Yeah. And what's great is that since the two of them are looking at these other couples as they're dancing, they're not looking at each other, which you would think that in general, if you're dancing with someone that you want to dance with, you're going to be looking at them. You know.
Yeah, they're just trying not to embarrass themselves.
No, but again, they said they don't care. You know, they've got nothing to lose. So let them embarrass themselves. You know, why should that matter? Let's embarrass ourselves. And then George gives Mary a compliment and says, "Hey, you're wonderful." It's a little, I don't know, it's a little hammy, the way that comes across.
You know? I don't know. There's something about the character of George that I give him a lot more leeway with cheesiness, just because he just seems so... like, he's so oblivious, and then he stumbles into these things, and it's like, hey, you're wonderful. It's like, you just thought that, and it came out of your mouth. Like, there's no filter.
Yes, George has no filter. That we know. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no way about it. George doesn't, he happens to be very smart, but he just doesn't really, he doesn't care what people are going to say or think about what he says, which is why he basically, talks. He's the only person who talks to Potter the way that he talks. So I think that also says something about that. All right, and that's pretty much how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Nope.
All right. So,
All set.
okay, great. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Uplifting Experience Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that, in some ways, is an uplifting experience. It could be something that happened directly to them or to someone else. So what type of story, what story do you have for us, Tierney?
I have a story that is a little bit uplifting all around, and it involves the Charleston dance. So it kind of goes over a few things. It was that I mentioned, we lived with my grandparents. We also lived across the street from my great grandmother, and she was having her kids around this time, 1928. She would have been, getting married, settling down. So she would already have been out of high school, but not by that much, out of high school and enough. She did train as a nurse. So I'm not sure of the exact years, but she had so much fun as a teenager. And it's funny, actually, many years later, we were watching an episode of My So-Called Life, the one where they have a dance, and it was me, a miserable middle schooler, my mother who had hated high school, my grandmother who had hated, could take or leave it. And she bops out with this, "Why are they so unhappy? High school is the best time of your life." And three generations just swiveled their head at her and were like, "Shut up, grandma. No one wants to hear about how much fun you had being in high school when we're all miserable." But she had she this was her time. She had stories. She had many sisters and brothers, and she ended up marrying another boy from the same neighborhood. Infamously, in her family, they had a porch that wrapped around the corner. They would shove the piano, or no, they would shove the piano up against the wall, open the windows, and that way they could dance on the porch, and people could play the piano on the windows. That sort of like Americana beautiful thing. When I was in fifth grade, I was tapped to be part of my high school group, the Jefferson Folk Dancers. I don't know why we had a folk dancing club for 10-year-olds, but we did, and I did it because I need the extracurriculars, I guess. I don't know. And we learned a lot of different dances, but one of them was the Charleston. And somewhere there is a videotape of me doing the Charleston for my great grandmother, and her like clap it, like tapping her foot, like she couldn't do it anymore, but she could like kind of keep the beat with it, and just beaming away. That, and I was like a chubby little 10-year-old too, like wearing like a Christmas sweater. It's so bad and so embarrassing, but it was just such a nice thing to like have this moment with her of like looking her in the eyes and her looking me in the eyes and being like, "Yeah, this is kind of fun, huh?" And I'm like, "Yeah, this is kind of fun. I get it." She also, because I spent time with her right up until the end, she would tell stories of high school and how much like her and her friends, going in their swimsuits down to the river. The boys saw them, Rob. The boys saw them in
Oh.
their swimsuits at the
Oh no.
river. And I'm just like, "Oh my God, Grandma, you're so cute." Well, so she was my great grandmother. I got a little bit confused as a kid. I called her Grandma's grandma my entire life. Like I just stacked them, Grandma, grandma, grandma's grandma.
Okay.
So
That's fair.
yeah. So we had a lot of fun adventures together. Because I think they liked having me along, because I would just go anywhere, do anything, I was up for whatever. And it kind of like, I think I kind of kept her young. I kept her, but like there was something to do with keeping me entertained and going places and going on picnics and stuff. And but I will never forget performing. And it would have been a Christmas Eve, probably that Christmas Eve of 1994, right before it turned to 1995. and I'm wearing one of the ugliest Christmas sweaters known to man and probably acid wash jeans. But I was but doing the Charleston in my grandparents' kitchen with my great grandmother like bopping along to it. It was really sweet. I could not do it for you today. Like, I mean, I can do the kicky part, the part where you're like spinning with your partner into, I couldn't do that. I would have to like relearn that, but it's fun. You know, it's,
but you remember then, the steps. That's what you're saying.
Kind of what they're doing. I know enough to fake it.
Okay.
I know how to like kind of bop around and swing about and have fun to the music. I don't know that I'm really doing the Charleston when I do it, but you know, my foot goes forward, my foot goes back, you tap, it's a whole thing. But you have to understand this is and then in the late 90s there was that big swing revival, and all of a sudden it was like, hey guys, I know how to do some of this. Again, it did not make me popular. I don't know why this is what I chose to do with my afternoon.
Wait, it made you unpopular or just didn't help you become more popular?
I did not help.
Uh-oh.
There was no like, ah, that Tierney, she knows how to Charleston. She's so cool. but it made my great grandma really happy. So
isn't that what's important?
Yes, exactly.
Did she start doing the moves with you?
Like I said, she was kind of like, you know how like they have their arm, you know, their arms at the ready, and they're just kind of like bop. They're turning a little bit in their chair in time with the music. That little grandma bop. She was doing that.
Okay.
I wish I could find it, because as embarrassing as it is, I would share it to the internet. But I honestly don't know where it is. It's somewhere in the depths of videotapes at my parents' house.
Along with the thousands of videotapes from your grandmother.
Yeah, that the FBI will come for any day. Yeah, this was still in the days of, like, the big camcorder with the VHS on your shoulder. So, I don't know where the evidence is of that.
Okay. That is definitely
yeah, and fair. I loved her stories of all the, like, teenagers in the neighborhood getting together and dancing on the porch while someone played the piano inside. I just thought that was so cool. Maybe I too would have enjoyed high school if that's what it had entailed.
Apparently. you went to high school in the wrong decade, I guess.
Obviously.
Or in the wrong century. Yeah. All right, great. So, Tierney, you want to tell people where they can find Tierney Steele?
You can search for Tierney Steele. I'm a published author.
Woo! Yeah,
I wrote a book called The Post Road. And I'm going to write more, but like my podcast, that also kind of got put on the back burner for several months. And all of a sudden I'm staring at a outline like, wait, I said I'd write what? So, but if you check it out, The Post Road is actually about high schoolers. It was inspired by American Graffiti. It's about a group of four friends on their last night before they split up for college. Only it's set in the late 90s, it's set in 2000, but it's set in my high school era. So, yeah, and it's a nice, like, it's classified as young adult. My sister, who's a librarian, was like, but Tierney, the references are for people who are older, whatever. People can enjoy whatever they want. It's fiction. It's not that long. It's a really nice, like, you know, I mentioned the last one, I was a military history major, and so I appreciate a nice, I call them palate cleanser books, when you've been reading some really intense stuff and you just need to read something like lighthearted. And in this one, like the teenagers think everything is the end of the world, but you know it's not. You know they're going to be fine. So it's called The Post Road, and it is under Tierney Steele, which is the same name I use for podcasting.
All right. Very cool. And while you're doing that, you can go review and subscribe. Many podcatcher might be using to listen to the show. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. life with its sorrow, life with its tears.